RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
And now, it's the Better with Bourbon podcast with Brad Martineau and Deacon Palmer. Fast thinking and smooth drinking.
The views and opinions shared on the Better with Bourbon podcast are our own and those of our guests. Nothing we discuss should be taken as financial, legal, business, or gambling advice. Don't make investment, business, or betting decisions based on our conversations, as you should always talk to a qualified professional. Always drink responsibly, never drink and drive, and only consume alcohol if you are of legal drinking age.
Fucking fantastic. All right, well, welcome to the Better with Bourbon podcast, where fast thinking meets smooth drinking. We're coming to you from the Better with Bourbon media studios here in Indiana, Pennsylvania, and it's March 4th today.
It is, isn't it?
All day today. Yeah. Ooh, I just banged our equipment here. What you doing? What's going on in your life today?
Not much. Wrote an article this morning, finished a book that I've been working on for the last few months on governance, so I'm happy to get that out hopefully tomorrow.
He's a taskmaster. Every day he's finishing something, getting something out. What's the topic? Governance, AI governance?
Yep, operational AI governance. So now we're talking about how you embed it into operations so that these big Fortune 500 companies aren't getting burnt.
Yeah, see, these aren't just talking points. This is a lifestyle, people. I mean, we take this so deathly serious.
Very seriously.
I mean, AI governance. Let me ask you this. Yeah. How many layers in your AI governance framework, Bradley?
16.
16 layers. Come on.
It's like a snow coat.
I used to work with like a 12 layer AI governance framework, but that's now a booty. I'm throwing that one away now that we get a 16.
So now I didn't get an attorney involved.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, congratulations. I read your piece on LinkedIn today. It was excellent. I commented.
I saw that. Thank you.
What did you think of my comment? Did it make any sense?
It made a lot of sense.
So. Yeah. Okay. Let me see. Should we say it? Does it even make?
No, you can say it.
Yeah. What was it? Okay. So now that frontier models are kind of blasé, and we're all talking about the new lightweight, super kind of edge-enabled, distilled models that are so much more flexible. Is that now the distilled models are the edge, and the old frontier models are like the cloud? Like, is that what the frontier we've moved into? Like, frontier models are
I think we are.
I mean, so old school that they're not even getting any play anymore.
Well, I don't know if they're old school. I think they just become very expensive and very complex. So unless you're doing complex research tasks or, you know, really in-depth research, then that might make sense for a big company to invest in and take the risks that come along with it. But it's the smaller, you know, more flexible model that you can take offline.
So the cloud analogy totally works.
Oh, I think it works perfectly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and that's why I gave it a big heart this morning, because I thought it was good. Yeah.
That came straight out of my brain.
That wasn't even AI talking, was it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so AI governance framework, lightweight models. We're going to talk a little bit about some of these things today. We're going to go into a really new cool agentic tool came out. We're going to talk a little bit about it. Not that it's groundbreaking, but it's just more evidence that 2026 is the year of agentic deployment. More partnership news. We talked a little bit about OpenAI's Frontier program last week with the consulting firms. They continued that this week with AWS. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk a little bit about what else are we going to talk about?
Well, we're going to follow up a little bit with Anthropic as to where that all ended after we left that off.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Talk a little bit of golf.
And golf, right? Man.
But let's talk first things first.
Yeah.
I want to talk Penguins. Penguins are second place in the Metro division, playing really good hockey, in spite of the fact that Sid got whacked in the Olympics and is now out for a couple weeks, which just, I mean.
Groin injury.
Isn't that like the. Was it a groin injury?
No, I thought it was some lower injury. I didn't get.
The groin.
Yeah, might have been.
Leave it to the.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the. I was going to say the Canadians, but it wasn't the Canadians. He was playing for the Canadians. He didn't. Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't like check hit him or something like that, right? Checked him.
He's pretty. I don't remember who it was. He's pretty resilient though. mean, yeah. he'll be
his legs are like tree trunks.
So they are.
Yeah. He's like a regular human being from the, like the waist.
He and Chris Letang are probably the most physically fit humans on the planet.
Yeah, Letang's a little bit of a hockey hero of mine. Got to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, we're gonna talk. But Pens, Pens are on another little run. We talk about them kind of overachieving this year. 6-2-2 over the last 10.
Yeah.
They dumped their last game on, Monday night? Was it last night?
Yeah. When they lost.
Yeah, but they came out hot, right? Didn't they score early? Yeah, the Kindle. That's really what I wanted to talk about. How about Ben Kindle? Kid's 18 years old.
Hmm.
I mean, we haven't had this much hockey excitement since, now this isn't really fair. Other cities, this is the fourth time we've had kind of this level of hockey excitement. We had it with the big Canadian, then we had it when Jager showed up, then we had it when Sydney showed up.
Now we've been spoiled since 1988.
Yeah, I mean, is this going to continue the streak? I mean, is the kid that good? He's 15 goals. 15 like 14 assists, 13 assists, something like that.
Pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, 18 years old.
Yeah.
Could be.
I mean, he's smooth as silk. I was asking the GPT like what's his game like, because other than seeing him score those couple of goals just recently, I think he has seven points in the last seven games or something like this. So he's on a bit of a tear.
Hmm.
I didn't really know much about him, so I asked GPT. They said they make football analogies for me because that's the way my monkey brain works. They said he plays center like a safety.
You're talking soccer now, not football?
No, actual football.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, actual football. You know what else?
I'm not sure with you.
You know what's funny? I actually asked GPT too. I asked Gemini about the show. I finally came out of the closet to Gemini and said, "Hey, I keep asking you about the Bourbon Podcast. I'm actually one of the hosts." And they're like, "Oh my gosh, this totally changes everything between us." Like, Gemini, it was so funny. it was hilarious.
I think you have a little bit too close a relationship with GPT.
Yeah, and then it started talking to me.
Is Alicia
like,
okay with this?
Yeah, right. It started talking to me then, like, and it'd be like, and then you, Deacon Palmer, as the co-host of the Better with Bourbon podcast. Like, it started speaking to me like it was a position that carried weight with it.
I think it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so the Pens. I'm down with the Pens. Although I want to say something really kind of down about the Pens. They I've noticed this over recent years. What is it with the Penguins losing in overtime? Have you noticed this?
Yeah.
I've every game I watch,
it's fucking atrocious.
Yeah. They start out and they're winning like 5-2. I watched a game earlier in this year. They were up 5-2 and they lost in overtime 6-5.
I
was like, what the hell happened?
Right.
No, I think it's because they're so old.
It's
like a bunch of old guys trying to have sex, you know, just finish this quick.
Yeah, no stamina.
No.
Gotta get this game over quick.
That's right.
If we could play 2.5 periods, the Penguins would be in first place.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Yeah, it's a damn shame. So I went back and looked. I mean, is there anybody worse in overtime over the last 5 years? Turns out that it's us and the Flyers are really, really at the bottom of.
Well, I like to see the Flyers in that category, but I hate to be in there with them. That's a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, what's it say about the state of Pennsylvania? Thank you, Pennsylvania, for taking such good care of us.
That's right, Rodney.
That's that PA shout out.
No, but I guess it's like a microcosm for our whole state. We're getting a little bit older. You know, we're not quite as quick as we used to be, but we still got plenty to be proud of.
I think we do.
Yeah, you like that?
I do.
Okay.
It's well said.
That's right. Well, that's awesome. Okay, so I don't know. You want to talk? You want to talk about? You want to try this bourbon?
I do want to try the bourbon.
Have you been sipping it?
I haven't tried it yet.
What is it?
It's Penelope.
Tell us, Penelope Architect, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's see here. Let's see. Let's give it a little swoosh. Perry's in it. Perry's been in it for like a half hour. What do you think about it?
I think it's very good. I had this recently. Did they have it at the Christmas party?
I think it was
delicious.
Not this very beautiful good. Blue label, this Architect.
No, as soon as I saw the picture that Brad sent, I was like, oh, that's a good one.
It's a little different. So this one has a little bit of that French oak, I guess, to it, huh?
Oh.
Yeah. It's a little fancy, huh?
You got the French oak in there.
That's right.
Let's take a look at the bottle. Bradley's prepared today. So this is Penelope, okay? The bottle's called Architect, and it says straight bourbon whiskey finished with French oak staves. So when I read this, okay, and this is 104 proof, 52.
Pretty smooth.
I said to myself when I read that, what the hell is a stave?
Yeah.
And why are we drinking stuff that has staves all over it? You know what a stave is?
Yeah, it's a single board.
That's right. Yeah, I had to look this up. Okay, so if you're going to have a barrel, right? A barrel is made up of individual pieces of wood, typically 31 to 33 individual pieces that are held together by those rings. Those individual pieces are called staves.
Yeah.
And apparently these Penelope folks won't match staves to get particular characteristics in their bottle, which is why they call this architect. They are building it.
Well, they have like high technology that they're using to determine which staves they're gonna put.
Yeah, in. Right. What's that? They do some
it's,
sort of
it's
like
all scientific. Digitalized.
It's science.
It's science. I mean, they're using science to figure out and get it as close as to the same every time as possible. That, hence the architect name.
What do you think? Other than the French oak that you dropped on us there. What you got? Anything else in there?
Yeah. A little caramel. I got a little bit of that in there.
What's a bottle that go for?
About $65.
It's funny you say caramel. Yeah, I got a little. You're right on there. Now, how would we rate this in terms of this? Actually, doesn't finish. There's not a whole lot of finish. You get some sweetness up front. You get a little bit of caramel. You got that right. Yeah. I definitely taste the staves. Staves are good.
Yeah, they are. Aren't they?
I'm a big fan of the staves.
Nothing but, like that French board in your mouth.
But it does. It does kind of drop off. There's
some French
not
wood.
Much finish to it. This is imminently drinkable now that this is watered.
Goes down pretty easy, right?
Yeah, you could chug a glass.
I mean, the barometer is probably going to get pretty empty here.
Yeah, I know. We're going to go through this guy.
Not to mention we got some guests in the house tonight too. You know, so we have three studio guests tonight.
We do. Yeah, and the studio's full tonight.
We're good friends.
Word spreading.
Podcast and ourselves. We got Mr. Gretler in the house. We got the Lockard family in the house.
Right. It's funny about, it's great having the Lockards here because they drink a bunch of bourbon. Yeah. And we know that. But,
well, and they even know how to make bourbon. That's even to the next level, right?
And Rodney is our bourbon overlord in the bourbon club.
We wouldn't have a bourbon club without him.
Yeah, we wouldn't have a bourbon club without him. That's his idea. Right. Yeah, right. So, this thing, this Penelope stuff is good. It's drinkable. We've had it at the bourbon club. But, there's a notable thing. They do these things where they are doing, what is it? It's essentially runs, or it's like, there are like different runs with different staves of wood.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to reuse them. So if you don't like number four in a build, right, and that's what they're calling these things, build, keep buying because number five, six, and seven will be different because they're trading out some of those staves. So I don't know. But this is Penelope is a New Jersey-based company, and they buy this stuff and assemble it. So this is kind of a financial buyer and a marketer instead of old school Kentucky bourbon family who's doing it that way. But
it's very good though.
No problem with the finished product.
No.
It'll get it done if we drink it.
Every Penelope I've ever tried always works.
Yeah, right. Used to know a girl named Penelope.
No way that bottle makes it through the episode.
No, I don't think it does either.
That's a fire. That fire's looking nice.
The fire is, yeah.
Harry, what do you think of the fire, buddy?
I think it looks perfect. Yeah. It was kind of wallowing along there, and then I got to admit, Deacon came along, threw some wood on there, and
boom.
Worked his magic, and that's beautiful.
The heat miser in the house.
Yeah, wasn't an Eagles guy.
The heat miser.
You want to talk a little golf?
Yeah, let's do.
What was the tour stop this week? It was not. This wasn't a big week. It was the Cognizant Open, Palm Beach Gardens. This is one of those like non-signature events. That's kind of one of those weeks that some of the top 10 players take off. It was in between the what was the big one 2 weeks ago that Tiger. Tiger was hosting out in California.
Genesis,
thank you. And then Bay Hill is next week, and we know that one's a ripper of a tour stop. But now, both of those are signature events, $20 million purses. This guy this week was, what was it, like $9.5 million purse. So a lot of the big guys skipped it. It was won by a dude that is Colombian, I believe, and his name's Nico. That's about as far into it as I got.
It came down to him, and I think was it? It was the Irishman that was coming.
Yeah, Shane Lowry.
Shane Lowry had a
had
a 3-shot lead coming into the last three holes and just fell apart like an Irishman at closing time. You know?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, if you're Shane Lowry and you're playing an event like this, you gotta figure. You know, I got to take that 1 point. I think it was like $1.74 million, which is. I mean, what's this say about the world of golf? We're like sneezing at this. Like,
yeah.
$1.74 million.
It's not even worth the trip.
Yeah, it's not even worth the trip, right? I know, exactly. I know. $4 million last week, $4 million next week for the winners.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, but Nico came out with a great win, and he's going to get some exemptions out of it. So
That's his third win on tour.
Yeah,
how about that? I mean, I
yeah.
Anyway, so
is that the guy that owns Anthropic?
Yeah.
Oh, Dario.
By the way,
Nico.
Barry's
getting the names.
I'll learn these names sooner or later.
That's right.
Other than that, we had some other interesting golf news this week. And I'm going to see if I can get through this without butchering it. But long and short of it is the PGA Tour has laid down rules and a method for LIV golfers to come back into the PGA fold should they so choose. And this is on the heels of LIV announcing a bunch of changes to their structure and kind of competitive nature. They're moving to, instead of three rounds, which is 54 holes, which is why they call it the, what do they call it? LIV, right? That's 54, mm-hmm. right? They're going to four rounds, 72 holes, just like the PGA. And the explanation I think everybody's accepting as real is this gets LIV players eligible for world golf rankings. You know, you can't be eligible for world golf rankings if you're not playing four rounds. So what is LIV now? And it's 54 is supposed to be the number, and now they're just playing 72 anyway. And it just
it's the PGA
seem,
now.
It's just a lame version of the PGA with a bunch of guys that you didn't really want to watch on the PGA, and the Saudi money's not really interesting anymore.
Yeah, just a bunch of
Phil Mickelson couldn't really make it happen, and it's just not cool. I mean, it's just it's golf with shorts and shitty music, right?
Just a bunch of good golfers running around with that Saudi money. I mean, they're having a good time with it, you know?
You know what? I know you were going to say this. I'm going to steal it from you. I think some of this is on the heels. If you're going to play like non-serious golf, for real, you're going to go do it with Tiger because Tiger's cooler than Mickelson and LIV. And there's not room for three golf leagues. There's really only room for one and a half. And Tiger's got that half locked up. So if you ain't the PGA, you got to figure out a way. I mean, like, is that really where we are?
The TGL tournament or league is catching fire. You know, they had a hole in one last night on Tiger's team to the last shot to make the playoffs. So
now when he says TGL, what he means is Tiger Golf League.
Yep.
Right. Cause that would be like, had I not known that, I wouldn't know what the hell you're talking about. Yeah. TGA Tiger.
It's Golf indoor. League. It's indoor. Yeah. It's kind of half real, half, you know, computerized and obviously a lot of fun.
But that shit's got, that's got some riz though. I mean, that's kind of fun.
It is. And obviously having Tiger in the house makes it fun. So,
and like us, they don't take themselves too seriously, which I think adds to the appeal. I mean, right. I mean,
yeah, I'm going to go off script because, you know, another guy that reminds me of Tiger Woods that is much like him is Michael Jordan, and he just won his third NASCAR race.
Did he really?
It's the first owner ever to win three NASCARs out of the chute.
What can he do?
Right?
I mean, I'll tell you.
He wanted to drive the car, but they couldn't fit, so they couldn't fold him in there.
Yeah,
so,
I know. But you know what's funny, though? When you see Michael lately, oh, he just looks bad. He looks like he's drinking all day.
He likes the bourbon.
Just drinking and doing cigars all day. They might get outside for 18 holes, but that's, I mean, just... But I guess, you know.
How old is Michael now?
He's got to be in his 60s now, right? 60.
Well, and you're comparing him to when he was, like, when he played basketball, he was like Chris Letang. You know,
yeah, of course. Yeah, so one of the finest.
Compared to that, he's ever to play. Yeah, yeah, of course, 100%.
But, yeah, maybe it's unrealistic to
he's the GOAT.
He's going to be that way forever, right?
But he's the GOAT. I'll say the controversial thing, he's the greatest that ever played the game.
Well, see, he wouldn't be like our other favorite 60-year-old. He'd be like, I'm just getting warmed up.
That's right.
I'm just getting started. Right. Anyway, well,
he's 6 days younger than
you. Is that right? Okay, so nice. We don't have to say the number out loud, but it's way younger than we all thought, I think, is the answer,
but
right?
Winners breed winners. That was your point with the NASCAR.
It is.
Winners breed winners.
It is. I mean, and you know, to win, I mean, you think about all the experts that have been in there, the Penskes and all them, you know, all the years, right? The Jeff Gordons, all the long history of tradition of racing.
Dick Trickle.
Right? Yeah. They just haven't, nobody has won three of the first races. That's amazing. I mean, they just, you know, to beat all the odds of not getting in an accident, you know, whatever else, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Especially against Hendrick.
Yeah, right? I mean, there's big money in there that, you know, where they're spending.
Michael doesn't have any money. I didn't realize. I got to read up on this. I didn't realize. Yeah. He's dominating another
sport. He is. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
The guy's reach is crazy. Well, relative to golf, we're now six weeks away from Hello, friends.
That's right.
Yeah, right, from the Masters. We might have to do like a Masters pick'em or maybe a Masters preview.
We are going to
upcoming. We are going to have to do one, right?
We're going to have to break it down.
Yeah. We might.
I agree.
Maybe we could even do a little bit of gambling, like right here.
Yeah.
Live on the show.
Yeah, right? Why not, right? Yeah.
Is that legal?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm running low. You running low?
I'm running low, but I think we need to say one more thing in the sports world, you know?
Oh, one more? Oh, yeah. Thank you for the reminder. Good.
No, and we just learned right before we came on air that one of the greatest coaching legends of all time, Lou Holtz, passed away. So, you know, here's to him.
Yeah, here's to Coach. That's too bad. Only a few real men left in the world. He was definitely one.
He was.
Yeah, toast to Coach Holtz.
You know, we didn't really talk about the war. You want to talk about the war, Ronnie, or you want to just let's talk about what do you think? What do you think Holtz would have thought about the war? He's an old school dude. What could I mean, like old school thinking versus new school thinking. I mean, you know, what do we think about Iran? You following it any?
A little bit. I mean, how can you not? It's everywhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
kind of like the U.S. Military over in Iran. So, you know, it is what it is. It seems like it's a record that's on repeat here in America. Every so many years, we have to get into a conflict with Iran, you know, and it's amazing that oil spikes every time it happens. And now there's a $1.4 trillion defense budget on the table. So, you know, it all gets justified for the big spending. And now you're getting the cynical person at the table here. But I just don't buy into it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I always view these things through the lens of the market. You know, it seemed like Monday when the market opened, you know, the 100-day moving average broke on the S&P 500, and it looked like it was going to be look out below, and we were just going to go cascading lower and lower and lower, and then it, you know, market got bought back up. I don't know who started buying, but the market came back up hundreds of points.
It did.
The same thing happened. Same thing happened Tuesday, and what we're recording Wednesday now, and the market is well off its lows for the week, and looking like it might turn around and go higher. Obviously, a reflection of the fact that it seems like the conflict has the potential to be short and sweet and not drag on for very long, which I know everybody's rooting for. But I guess we should probably say it's good for the, you know, for those of us who don't follow global politics, we need to delineate in this thing between the Iranian regime, the government, and the Iranian people, right? Iran was kind of a destination location for many, many years into the 70s until the then Shah fell and was overthrown by the fundamentalists that have been in charge ever since. And they've kind of run the country from a very kind of westernized kind of location with a very diverse economy and lots of tourism and lots of global relationships into like this kind of cave dwelling kind of fundamentalist kind of picture that we now have of them. So while it's a good thing that we are overthrowing the government, it's also a good thing that we're positioning the people to govern on their own. That sounded very serious, didn't it?
It did. It sounds like you've been talking to Butch. You know, you kind of know what you're talking about.
Butch. Yeah, well, I mean, it's so rare that you actually get to use your political science degree. I'm never going to pass on the opportunity. Right? Yeah, exactly. We get the reference. Huh? Oh, I can't adjust. It's all right. It's gonna be fine. All right. Well, anyway, I hope the here's best to the men and women serving. Thanks for your service. Thanks for looking out for us.
For sure.
What do you think? You want to stoke the fire?
Gotta stoke the fire.
Some more. We'll come back. Talk a little business.
We'll come back. Talk a little business and AI.
You got it, baby. Cheers. All right.
What happens when work disappears, when money dissolves, and when freedom becomes something you earn, not something you're born with? A new kind of power is rising, not a government, not a corporation, but the algorithm. In the algorithmic state, no jobs, no money, little freedom. Amazon best-selling author Bradley J. Martineau reveals the world we're stepping into. A world where your reputation is computed, your opportunities are filtered, and your identity is shaped by systems that know you better than you know yourself. This is not science fiction. This is the operating manual of the future forming around us right now. If you want to understand the forces that will define power, belonging, and freedom in the decades ahead, start here. The algorithmic state, no jobs, no money, little freedom. Available now on Amazon.
So we definitely should consider building our own agent and need our own cooking. I mean, we're going to be talking about this all the time. It's not like,
why not?
You have endless hours to do this shit. We should build our own agent. I don't know whether you'd want to do it, whether you want to use Anthropic inside Microsoft or however you want to do it, but give it access, give it a show-based
yep.
email address.
Yep.
At Better with Bourbon Media, mm-hmm. whatever. Give it a Microsoft Office account. Give it the ability to post on, LinkedIn or Twitter, whatever the least damaging one. Twitter probably. Yep. Let it post on Twitter for a little while and see if it figures out how to do. And then we could build another agent, Perry, that specifically we could give it access to the editing software and. And show it some examples and say, okay, build a couple of these. Like, why would we not?
That's a great idea.
And we'll give it access to your OnlyFans page as well.
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah. We could let it build the OnlyFans experience.
Yeah, right.
Right. We'd have to name it, though. What would we name our agent?
You're giving away our secrets on the air.
Well, I mean, we should probably have people write in to name the agent. I mean, better. I mean, what would you want to name the agent? He'd want to name it, what's his dog's name?
We should name it after Gus.
Gus. Yeah.
Speaking of dogs.
Gus, the beat up.
No offense to Rod's dog.
Right. So, okay. Well, so maybe we'll do this. We'll provide some updates if we come back on it. But we got a couple news stories this week we should probably get into.
Yeah.
There was some agentic stuff going on. I'm going to have to read some of these details to you because this company is one that I'd not heard of before. But
until you brought it up. But I did know there was a bunch of companies in this space when you're talking about the. You know, well, the coding, the vibe coding is what they call it.
Yeah, exactly, right? So 2026 is going to be the year of agentic development, and we've talked a lot about it. We're going to continue to talk about it with big names. But it's neat to hear of more accessible little companies that maybe we could use, in our business every day. Maybe Perry could use this at his place of business. Maybe, you know, Michelle and I could use this in our work.
Well, their numbers aren't quite so little, though. I mean, they're
doing... Well, right, but this is a company named Pigment, and they have a product called AI Modeler Agent. And they just hit $100 million in ARR, annual run rate recurring revenue,
yeah.
Which is a big deal for a business. That's when you can start taking debt and getting lines of credit and banks take you seriously and you can hire and get leases and shit like that. But it's a big time financial milestone. The neat thing about what they do is this is a fully agentic AI model that can take various spreadsheets that any organization, any middle market business uses, and here the use case would be you have a spreadsheet that the head of sales uses, he pulls it out of Salesforce.com or whatever your CRM is to give weighting of what your pipeline is so you could forecast expected revenue for a month and into a quarter. You give that spreadsheet to finance. Finance takes off of it what it needs so it can figure out how it's going to allocate expense reimbursement, disbursements based on, how you're tracking revenue to quarterly plan, across the year. And then hiring says, well, okay, if we're at X amount of run rate and we're meeting these revenue goals and we can hire this number of people as was dictated by the quarterly plan, all of those are on different spreadsheets. Wouldn't it be great to have a piece of technology that would, using a voice command, allow for you as the CEO to say, hey, give me an update on these three variables in a way that I can deliver to the private equity stakeholder when I meet with them later today. So it's an agentic tool that uses voice command to do very complicated output-based analysis. And what's neat is Excel is always like a two-dimensional, you have up and down based on the columns in the spreadsheet. This makes it multidimensional because you can mix and match spreadsheets across different planes. So I thought that was very neat because that's something that every company in the world
opens it up because if you think about the Excel spreadsheet, how many hours did we used to fumble and fight over the formulas in there? And now this is all being done automatically. And now you're integrating probably other, platforms into this. You can make it as 3D dimensional as you want and as attractive, visibly attractive. It's not going to be your typical spreadsheet anymore.
Well, that's really, but that's where when you really get into it, what is AI going to do? Is it going to take somebody's job? Yeah, of course, that is multiple people's jobs. But What if that person's job, instead of maintaining that spreadsheet, which is a very reasonable entry-level job that lots of people have coming out of, you name the university here, what if that job turned into, instead of maintaining data, one where you were distilling insights from the data and you became actionable and you were able to make recommendations instead of just moving numbers around? So
So you're getting into more of the strategy level and the decision-making level, which I think is where the jobs are going to shift if you're a good worker.
Of course. Does it disrupt? Sure, it does.
It's going to disrupt. And in fact, the numbers that came out said that about 12% of the jobs out there in the white-collar world right now can be replaced by AI agents as we speak. That's $1.2 trillion in numbers of GDP. So that's a big number.
Well, so where do you fall in this? You've written how many books about this? Are those jobs just gone, or how many of those get repurposed? How many of those just get cut?
Yeah.
See, here's what I'm interested in. How many of those get cut and then replaced later when we know where that capital intensivity becomes more...
Right. And a lot of...
More pronounced, right?
It all depends on the company. But like workforce, one of the top... tech companies just laid off half their workforce today. So,
you're talking about what's his name? It's a Block, Square.
Yeah, the Block.
I think it was like 25% of the workforce.
It was a big number.
Yeah, it was a big number.
So, I mean, and he didn't replace them all, and he said the AI can do it better than his workers were doing it, and cheaper.
Well, this company, that we're talking about here, Pigment, with this tool. Here are some stats about their business. 56% of their new enterprise clients, which are companies like Unilever, Siemens, and Snowflake. Okay, so these are definitely
big names.
Global 1000 kind of names. Left giant legacy ERP programs like Anaplan and Oracle. So if we refer back to what we were talking about last week about these giant ERP systems and how that was a regime and technology adoption in corporate America, and now this is kind of the modern day iteration of that, it would make sense that some of those, large kind of seat based, license based software providers are going to take a hit, because if you can build your own, just pay for a central usage model and $20 a month to have your folks use it, like we pay for Anthropic or Google or ChatGPT, just a regular user's license, you get so much more value out of that. And it really brings into question this whole question about, how are software companies making their money, and do you need all the functionality that they sell you, right? I mean, Gartner, we used to do studies all the time about how much functionality in great big giant platforms like Oracle's ERP or Salesforce.com's flagship model. You only need 15% of the functionality, but you have to buy 100% of what the license gives you. And right. And companies are just so tired of that. You waste so much money doing that, and you're locked in these contracts that run years and years and years and years. So when we look at the market, what does any of this stuff, why would anybody care about this company Pigment and their product called AI Modeler Agent, and how does that have anything to do with the real world? Well, if you've looked at the Software Development Services Index, which is a component of the S&P 500, probably the best example would be Microsoft, biggest software company in the world. Microsoft has just been getting murdered for months. It's just getting killed. $400. It's trying to find a floor at $400. How high was Microsoft at its peak? Was it 600 and change? You remember, how high was Microsoft at its change, Bernie? I know you know it. 600 and change. Anyway, Microsoft's just getting hammered. So it's trying to find a floor. And all of this is because everybody who's starting a company no longer has to go pay out the nose for Microsoft Office 365. You can use Google's free shit. Develop an agent like we were talking about doing here at the beginning of the segment, and build your own software.
Yeah.
Right. If you're only going to use 15% of what you're paying for anyway, why just pay the money for a couple of months, build your own, and use it forever?
And make it exactly like you want it.
Particularly if you can do it without coding. You can just do it with your voice, right?
Yeah. You just tell it what you want.
And see, we got to do this. We got to build some software.
We will.
And talk
isn't
about
that
it.
What I Anthropic mean,
otherwise, we're just straight up posers, right?
Isn't that what Anthropic is kind of known for?
That's exactly what Anthropic
exactly
is.
What it's exactly what it's known for. And that's why they've been so disruptive. Although, speaking of Anthropic, maybe it's a good segue.
Yeah, you want to talk about Anthropic? What's going on with that? They're in the news again this week.
Yeah, just to say that follow-up that the Pentagon did make a final decision and they didn't come to terms. So they decided to drop Anthropic, not only from the Pentagon, but every federal agency. So, through an executive order of Trump.
So, okay. So what do we think about this? We've kind of made fun of Dario's desire to talk his book.
Mm-hmm.
So either he's really committed to this charade that he's playing, or he might not be really best suited for that job. I mean, if he's going to tell the biggest customer in the world, no, you can't buy my shit, should he be running that company? Isn't the CEO's job to sell the product? Hey, when you're CEO of a company, isn't your job to help sell the product? We got multiple CEOs here in the...
Yeah, and I think what he's...
Aren't you supposed to help the company succeed?
I think what he's wrestling with is
hey, when you were running a company, did you ever talk yourself right out of a giant contract? No? Yeah.
Yeah, it seems right. That Dario's his own worst enemy.
I mean, holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, it probably wasn't the smartest financial, at least short-term financial decision. But
okay, what's the good in it?
Well, but like we were talking last week, you know, by putting his foot down, he's getting a lot of free press off of this. He's making a statement that, you know, he is about the responsible AI component of this development, which is a big push. I mean, that's a big push out there in the governance world. It's a big push in the enterprise world. You know, everybody else is rushing so haphazardly. And Dario's been, you know, very outspoken on a lot of podcasts about what can happen if we go too quick, too fast.
He can still afford the good headphones. Yeah, you know, he can. Pappy Van Winkle if he wants it. I mean, those $7 billion numbers.
Yeah, the valuation.
For now.
Yeah, for now.
For now, right? But his platform is good, and that's why the government wanted it. I mean, and just like you were saying, he did change the coding world, and he disrupted the coding world. We saw that in the stock market when they said they have a patch for cybersecurity that it can immediately detect anything right away and give you the fix.
So. Yeah, less details on that. Anthropic came out with a product. Was this last week or this mm-hmm. week that last basically week. Said, yeah, it can evaluate cybersecurity code, understand what it's reading, and then patch it without human intervention.
Right.
I mean, are you serious?
Yeah.
How many network engineer and security, you know, data sec people, you know, immediately lost their stomach on that one. I mean, right. That's a lot of high-paying jobs.
It is.
A lot of high-paying jobs. And I don't have the answer to that one.
And it's just the beginning. So now, yeah, right. You know, they're obviously going to continue to train and continue to figure out what's going on, and probably better so than a human being can do to stay ahead of the curve of where the technology, you know, gaps are.
Well, yeah, definitely. You wrote an article this week that kind of touches on a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I read it today on LinkedIn. It was pretty sweet.
Thanks.
Tell us what your article was about.
Well, it kind of flies in the face, at least at first glance, of the next thing that we're going to talk about, and that is the partnership between OpenAI and AWS on the frontier level, on their agentic. But it's saying that, you know, major enterprises and organizations are not finding that the frontier models, the larger MML models, are working for them because they're too big, they're too complex, and they carry too much risk.
Okay, so hold on here. Let's just contextualize. You're saying that the big LLMs, the big ones that we all know that we started talking about for weeks and weeks, Gemini, OpenAI...
What the fuck?
That's almost like Cardi walking over and grabbing the bottle at night. That was hilarious.
Right. So getting back to this. So what you're saying is that the big frontier LLM models, your OpenAI, your Gemini, your Claude, your Grok,
yep.
The ones that we've spent all this time and money training and developing are no longer suitable for a lot of specialized applications. Is that what you're saying? Well, and what are we doing instead of that? What is the next evolution?
And it's not even specialized applications. It's the normal applications that these companies were trying to utilize them for, and they found they just to be too generic, too big, mm-hmm. too risky.
Mm-hmm.
And
why risky? Explain that.
Well, because you have so much data.
Mm-hmm.
You have the cloud out there. You're leaving the premises, so you have the data leakage issues.
Okay, so what you're saying is that to use those frontier models as they exist, as we as consumers use them, what you got to do as a company is you got to put your data in that context window,
right.
Send it away
right.
to somebody else's server, right?
You don't own it anymore.
Right, you don't own it anymore, and there's no guarantees that people aren't reading that data, consuming it, doing right. what they want with it, stealing it, like we found out last week the fucking DeepSeek people in China are taking that. Okay, so what you're saying is this new paradigm allows for more control over the data because those models can be run locally on-premise again, right?
For what?
Well, that's a real departure from
well, it is.
The world of enterprise computing over the last 20 years.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
It's a huge departure. Yeah. And what they're finding is that the localized, self-contained models can do most of the administrative, repetitive tasks in-house that need to be done.
Right. Let's just continue to break this down. So what you're saying is that when ChatGPT-4 was released, and we're like, holy shit, this can do so much stuff that nobody could ever do before. The problem with it, now versus, 5 months ago, 6 months ago when ChatGPT-4 came out, is that every time you put anything in that context window, the full model had to run, right? All the safeguards, all the stuff you didn't want, all the stuff, you might be asking it a question about cooking, and it still has to run through all the shit that it knows about molecular biology and, surface tension. And all you want to know is how much sugar to put in the cookies, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So what you're saying is that now today, new models are being trained using this distillation process that we're talking about, right? To do very specific sets of kind of domain-specific tasks, yes, right? Yes. Okay, so these are agents, and these are going to be deployed into whether they be vertical marketplaces like financial services or legal or manufacturing, or horizontal marketplaces. They'll be agents for financial professionals, right? Right. Agents for legal professionals, right? I mean, no matter what industry you're working in, right?
But a lot safer, a lot more controllable.
Yeah, right.
And that's the biggest issue that they're having is, were they able to control it? Were they able to control the biases that came out of it? Were they able to control the drifting that came out of it?
A smaller model allows you to govern that, allows you to monitor dispersion a lot better.
So all that makes a big difference.
And that's what your article was about.
And that's essentially what it was about. Yeah.
Nice. You should read it. It's on LinkedIn, and comment, like, and just like you're going to do for this episode, shout Bradley out, ask him some questions. Hell, you might ask him a question, I might answer it.
Yeah, right. Night. I mean, I like it when you chirp in.
Yeah, right. You probably want him to answer better. But what else happened? So we did. We talked. Talk to me about this new. Going back to what we talked about last week.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about again with this agentic theme. OpenAI last week came out with this frontier program with all the consulting firms, and we talked about the four that were going to go out and help companies build agents and shit.
From a marketing
standpoint, they had another announcement this week where they said, and this was an interesting one, because keep in mind, OpenAI has a long-standing, very deep relationship with Microsoft.
They do.
Okay, and Microsoft has a cloud product called Azure. Very well ingrained in corporate America.
Very well respected.
Their number one competitor is AWS, right? Amazon Web Services. So Amazon and Microsoft compete big time. OpenAI has this day one ride or die relationship with Microsoft, but this week they announced a brand new partnership with AWS
for their Frontier Agentic model. Yep.
Okay. And can you give us any details about this thing?
Well, they're going to use AWS's cloud exclusively for it. So it's going to instantly, again, for OpenAI, allow them to globally reach out into all of these existing clients of AWS and Amazon. It's going to immediately have an impact. But on the other hand, obviously there's something in it for Amazon as well. For the $50 billion that they're investing, they're being guaranteed by OpenAI that they're going to utilize up to 2 gigawatts of their data center power.
Right. So back to this data center thing that we're talking about. So everybody's making deals for nice-to-haves based around the thing that everybody needs, which is compute capability and guaranteed space to run these workloads, right?
Which, again, that just kind of solidifies their build-out. And 2 gigawatts, how many homes is that power? I think it's like 1.5 million homes. It's a lot of power,
Okay, so I got some crazy stats on this shit. Okay, so in addition to this, there's going to be a $50 billion investment Amazon is going to throw at OpenAI. Now, keep in mind, I can't remember the number. What was it? Something like, was it eight trillion? Well, we'll have to come back and review. But okay, so $50 billion is coming from Amazon. Okay, this is a massive amount of money. And it values OpenAI. The level at which that investment was made values OpenAI at $730 billion.
That's a big jump.
That's a big number. Okay, so $730 billion. OpenAI is a private company. But $730 billion is... Get this. It's Starbucks plus Netflix plus McDonald's. That's how big OpenAI is now financially. It's Starbucks plus Netflix plus McDonald's. Or, we could do it again, ExxonMobil plus Target. That's how big. Yeah, that didn't even make any sense.
It's turning into an Austin Powers.
It really is. Well, and it's the partnerships. You know, it's just like what they did last week with the top consulting firms. They're instantly ingrained with all these Fortune 1,000 companies because of that. Right. And now with AWS, you're instantly on their bedrock, infrastructure. You're instantly with everybody that has that enterprise level. And again, this back to what I was writing about this morning. It gets to you're targeting a very narrow group here because it is the enterprise frontier level that you're targeting. So it is only going to be the complex agentic work that's being done, the research work, the PhD type work.
But these companies also have endless budgets to allocate toward tokenization.
Yeah.
Well, endless budget. I mean, that's why
seems like, right?
These companies are so interested in going out and helping the... insert name of company here, FedEx, McDonald's, whatever. The AI workloads they're going to generate are just massive, just like web traffic was back in 1995. It was this big, and now it's this big.
Well, and if you recall, when we were talking about OpenAI, one of the largest investors in OpenAI is Microsoft. So they have a 26 to 28% interest. And so after this was kind of being, heard about and it was getting out into the marketplace, OpenAI and Microsoft came out and said, no, this doesn't affect our relationship one bit. We're still exactly where we were when we started.
Yeah, well,
we're going to be right where we are after this. So I think what's happening is OpenAI is trying to figure a way to raise the money that they thought they had from NVIDIA, Jensen backed off of his $100 million.
Interesting. Coming back to stories billion. That we previously talked about, right?
$100 billion.
Isn't it funny? Wouldn't that be amazing? If this were like a kid, if like OpenAI were like an unruly teenager, just running back and forth between like aunts and uncles begging for money.
That's kind of how I feel playing, like Sam Altman's playing the field right now.
Yeah, right. In California. Playing crazy Aunt Gertrude off of Uncle Richard because he's drunk and knows that, right? And
that's what it feels like.
What's going on, right?
That's kind of what it feels like, doesn't it?
Yeah, right.
So where's Elon Musk in all of this?
He's kind of gone quiet.
His name is...
Yeah, all of a sudden he's not going to Mars. He's hopefully maybe getting to the moon.
Yeah, I think he's put his ducks in
a row. I heard they canceled that as well.
Artemis. And so they had a combination. Their companies joined, right? So that was like the biggest, which we haven't really talked about.
Grok got folded into.
Everything kind of folded into. Is it Tesla?
No, it's SpaceX.
Or SpaceX?
Yeah.
So, that's a big move for him, personally, obviously. It's a big move for the capitalization of that company. He's been kind of laughed at. Sam Altman said the idea of doing...
was absurd, right? Yeah.
Space data centers just isn't going to happen. That's absolutely absurd.
Somebody take that phone away from him. That's right. Bailiff! anyway, right. But they said... But this is... I mean, one, that story... that Elon was telling was a little bit wild because it sounds like science fiction. And I know that, he's succeeded in this area before. But like when you think about the advances just in the way models are being rolled out, you got to ask the question, like, is that necessary right now? Like, would you take the risk to do that now when you have no idea what chip architectures are going to look like? I mean, look at what chip architectures have done in the last like just 24 months.
It's amazing.
Like, yeah,
they're getting a lot more efficient.
It's wild.
Yeah, so that's going to change everything, in the next year or two. And I think that's where the focus needs to be on. But Elon has a self-serving interest, obviously, to use his spaceships to take data centers to the to the outer space world and his satellites, you know, are obviously going to feed it. So
Elon runs a self-contained. He makes his own chips. He has his own communications protocols. Everything is self-contained, which is why Tesla has the ability to drive on its own and other cars don't. If we go back to OpenAI, like one of the things that they're clearly doing is, remember all the conversations we've had about them before comes back to NVIDIA and whether they can get NVIDIA chips or whether they have all the NVIDIA chips or whether they're getting them first or second and how many they're getting and how much money NVIDIA is going to give them that they're going to give back to NVIDIA for their chips and all the circular financing bullshit that we've been talking about forever. This is really interesting because it's pretty clear that OpenAI is trying to put a buffer between them and their total reliance on NVIDIA because AWS is going to use AWS proprietary chips for this.
Yeah, it sounds like they are. They're using the chips. Yeah. But Jensen also came out in talking about this deal and said they're gearing up to be able to make more chips. So they want to be able to provide everybody with as many chips as they need because they said their return on investment is going to be amazing. So.
Well, yeah, but that has nothing to do with why OpenAI would openly make the choice to not buy NVIDIA chips.
Well, it's the only
they're doing that to diversify.
Well, they have to at this point because the NVIDIA chips are not available. But what they're saying is they will be available in the future. So at this moment, it makes a lot of sense to diversify. It also makes a lot of sense.
Well, why is the question? I think say at this moment, it makes sense to diversify because you don't need Vera Rubin chips running every aspect of both training and inference anymore. No. You just don't. You can run inference using specialized chips, just like Anthropic has proven, and that's I guess why they're doing this with AWS now, because you don't need to. The frontier models trained, right? And they'll continue to train new frontier models on those super high end chips, but
and for most 90% of what they're
gonna the game do. Now is you know the agentic move. They don't need more better AI models. They need more better agents.
That's right.
Right.
And safer spots, and so that's what AWS provides them is that environment.
You think we should take a break?
I think we should. Yeah,
come back.
Fill up.
Fill up. Come back and close this out with some real jibber jabber.
We'll close it out with something.
Some downright.
That's right.
Some downright horse pucky. All right. Cheers. Cheers. All right. Cheers. All right.
What happens when work disappears? When money dissolves? And when freedom becomes something you earn, not something you're born with, a new kind of power is rising, not a government, not a corporation, but the algorithm. In the algorithmic state, no jobs, no money, little freedom, Amazon best-selling author Bradley J. Martineau reveals the world we're stepping into, a world where your reputation is computed, your opportunities are filtered, and your identity is shaped by systems that know you better than you know yourself. This is not science fiction. This is the operating manual of the future forming around us right now. If you want to understand the forces that will define power, belonging, and freedom in the decades ahead, start here. The algorithmic state. No jobs, no money, little freedom. Available now on Amazon.
We are on the air. Nice. Okay. So welcome back. Fast thinking, smooth drinking.
Bourbon's going down. Fire's going up.
Yeah, right. The fire is gorgeous tonight. And I'll tell you, you know.
That might be the best fire we've had.
Thank you.
2 months or whatever we've been doing. Best one I've ever
seen. Our lubricity level is almost.
You know, our lubricity. Yeah, our lubricity.
Yeah, we need to discuss lubricity at some point with Lou.
Yeah, right. We got to get Louie here. We got to get Cardi back in the studio for that one.
We will.
You know, and I don't feel like.
Cardi's not welcome.
Cardi's not welcome. I'm not sure we gave Penelope a review that, I mean, I'm enjoying drinking this. Maybe that's probably the most important thing. We're down to the last third of the last quarter of the bottle.
There'll be nothing left at the end of the night, I guarantee you.
Yeah, there'll be nothing left. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so we're endorsing Penelope.
We definitely are endorsing it. I'm glad that we added it to our repertoire. We're going to have to get the graph out there where we do rate it on our different 4-point checklist.
Yeah, the bourbonometer. What's the bourbon? What's it?
Bourbonometer.
The bourbonometer. The bourbonometer
phrase. You have to know it.
Yeah, right. The bourbonometer is dropping like the market did on Monday.
On Monday,
Tuesday
it's going down
week.
Quick.
I mean, should we talk about the market a
little? Yeah, I think we should talk about the market a little bit because it's been in the news all week, and
what asset class should we start with? Should we talk about stocks?
Let's start with stocks. Yeah, because I mean, stocks? That was the first and foremost. That
yeah. Okay. Well, we let the cat out of the bag a little bit on this on Monday. Monday, Tuesday, we had a break. Now, we're talking about the S&P 500, right? The SPX broke the 100-day moving average, which is a really important technical indicator. And there are a couple things going on here. Number one, we've been essentially going sideways since October. It might feel like the market's been, you know, really up at points and really down at other points, but we went sideways for 5 months now. Number two, the high in the S&P was just above 7,002. And at our lowest point this week, even though it felt like the world was ending there for a hot second, if you were in some of these fast-moving stocks, the market itself was only down 4.2% from its peak to its trough.
Yeah, not
from its high to its low. It's down 4.2%. Now, that's the S&P.
Yeah.
A lot of the fast-moving tech names, certainly the companies that we've been talking about today, your Nibius, your anything having to do with NeoClouds, your right. Applied Digital, your iRen, your CoreWeave.
That's right.
Any of the AI.
What the hell's a NeoCloud?
Say what?
NeoCloud. What's that?
NeoCloud?
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. There that's a go. Good question.
It's a great question.
Good. Yeah. If you have
come on, talk to the lay people here.
NeoCloud. Oh shit! I just spit. NeoCloud companies are the companies like CoreWeave, Nibius, and Applied Digital that are putting together these series of data centers where they're essentially renting out those super high-end server spaces to corporate clients, right? Because not everybody's going to build their own data center. You're going to build a couple, and you might rent a couple.
It's digital management. Real estate.
Yeah, it's digital real estate.
You
exactly.
You can rent it by the minute. You can rent it by the hour. You can rent it by the month, by the week, by the year.
Kind of like what you were had originally talked about doing with Newton.
That's correct.
Yep. Okay, gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah, so NeoCloud's just like it's a type of provider. They're like a digital real estate company. Mm-hmm. That's a really good analogy, Bradley. Right. Anyway.
When you say you, Brad, who do you mean by who's you? Corporations?
Yes. I mean, anybody can rent it. But the most likely players to rent it, because it's not cheap. I mean, you're talking for a minute of compute time, $4 to $5. I mean, it gets expensive after a while when you start adding up the training time on these servers. So,
like a Super Bowl commercial.
They spend,
that's a good point. So you can see what they're making if they have that kind of money to get to advertise on the Super Bowl. So,
yeah, anyway, they rent them by the token, right? It's basically you rent it by the unit of output. So. Those are tokens. Anyway, so all these stocks have been, even though the market's only down 4% from top to bottom earlier this week, it felt like the world was going to end. The market's fine. Anything having to do with data centers or software is no bueno, no fly zone right now. And in fact, they've been just getting pummeled. Interestingly, though, because I am anti-consensus in nature, I actually did some buying for the home team last week in a couple of these stocks. A couple in my own account, couple for the lady.
Nice.
And I try not to, I'm not fast and loose with the home team's money. I try to play that by the books.
I know you are.
But everything was on sale last week.
It feels like it. It's definitely on sale. And I would say that, the market is being resilient.
Yeah, showing some resiliency. Well,
even against
response to the action in Iran, it seems like we're succeeding. So why?
Right, but still, that could be uncertainty, right? And so that puts it into the market. You also have the job reports, which are concerning every time they come out. It gets back to AI. You know, how many jobs are being lost in through it?
Yeah, that's here's what really happens underneath the surface, and here's what really matters. And I know that's exactly what the press will tell you is driving the market. That's not what's driving the market. What's driving the market is liquidity. And we're coming out of a period where historically there's just not a lot of money in the Treasury general account at this point in the year, but we're coming into tax season, right? And in tax season, when we move into the spring, everybody does what? You send money to the government because you owe your taxes. And at that point, Everything having to do with downstream effects from government liquidity the whole way through to commercial banks all have a wash of liquidity, and that's going to happen this year. So it feels like money's coming back into the market, even though there have been many, many reasons to not participate. All that horseshit about Minneapolis and the fact we're going to have a civil war, how quickly that's gone away, the real war that we're having in Iran, that seems to be working out. I'm really interested to find out more about what's going on with Canada? Minneapolis and California and some of these fraud schemes. What'd you say, Canada?
Yeah.
Canada? No, I mean honestly, I love Canada. I would love to take a vacation to Montreal this summer and go up there and do a little parlez-vous with the ladies up there in Montreal. I mean, Montreal is a city full of beautiful women and good food. If I do
taking advantage of the fact that yours doesn't watch the show. Nicely played.
Montreal. Yeah, anyway. So yeah, but yeah, markets
French speaking ladies.
But you know what, the you know, we have I think money's coming back into risk assets because it's coming out of gold and silver. I mean, this because of this war stuff, you had a huge spike in gold and silver last week, and it just seems like that was money that's come right back out.
Yeah.
Right back out.
Well, it's definitely going somewhere, right?
So, well, and oil. Oil's up.
So oil's up.
Yeah, oil's up 10 bucks.
But again, it always seems like every time there's a conflict over in Iran, the oil spikes.
Well, that's the playbook. I honestly, I think that if we take recent history as a play, there are some, I think the administration is playing 3D chess. This isn't checkers, right? When they did what they did in South America, what was the country we just took Maduro Venezuela. Out of? Venezuela, yeah. We essentially control that oil now. Venezuela sold oil to who on the global stage? It was China and Russia, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And now we're over messing with Iran, who sells the majority of their oil to who? China and Russia.
Right.
And we're giving them the opportunity to choose to govern themselves in a more responsible way. And I'm sure that we'll offer the opportunity to help them manage their oil surplus for a fee at somewhere. And so while this has the near-term effect of making oil spike, I think long-term this has I think if the Venezuelan precedent has any, kind of bearing on where we're going to see oil prices come down long-term. Iran being out of the market's a good thing.
I think it would be for our domestic players.
Certainly be good for Europe.
Yeah, I agree.
Iran gives China oil. China gives Iran rare earth metals back that are necessary to build batteries that go into drones because Iran is a major drone producer, right? And
the question was, is there any interplay between Iran and China? Because oil is one of the things that China probably does not produce on its own.
No, so, they really don't. Yeah, no.
So, yeah.
They have to buy it.
So they have to buy it, and they're very reliant on Iran. They don't want to be reliant on us, of course. So
we'd be happy to sell them oil.
We would, just like we've been selling them coal. And the coal's been working out well for our domestic. No joke.
Yeah, thank you, Pennsylvania, for taking such good care of us.
And taking good care of the Chinese.
That's right.
The coal.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that, with any war, all it takes is a missile landing somewhere and the markets could cascade lower for, weeks and months on end. But
you know, it was kind of awe-striking to me just watching on the news is the few
strikes
that happened in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dubai being this beautiful multi-billion dollar brand new city that's high tech, and here you see it under attack, it's...
Well, so we should probably, here's another opportunity to nerd out with our listeners. And like, look, there's two different types of Muslims, right? There is the Sunni Muslim, and then there is the Shia Muslim. So when you talk about Dubai and Saudi Arabia, a lot of those folks tend to be Sunni in their orientation, right? And these are your high-end oil magnates. If we're trying to create kind of a stereotype, they're educated, they're Western, they come to school in the U.S. and go back and have very Westernized kind of ideas about how to run family business, typically around oil. But then there's the Shia side. The Shia And again, we're generalizing for the sake of our Western Pennsylvania kind of middle-aged, middle-class audience here. So I'm, you know, somebody could take offense at this. Please don't. Shia are, tend to be your kind of fundamentalist, you know, ultra-conservative Muslim head, you know, who will chop off heads and take, you know, death to the West and all that stuff. So we have a definite future with one of those teams. That would be the Sunni side, and U.S. relations with Sunni Muslims are going really well. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea here is if we get rid of this kind of fundamentalist Shia sect that's running Iran, the people in Iran might have an opportunity to join the kind of broader kind of prosperity in the region and maybe make good with Israel, and we can all get along in a new era of prosperity, which would unleash... a global wave of liquidity, which would support what's going on in crypto right now.
Yeah.
Crypto has found a bottom.
I think it has.
Right? Well, okay. When crypto went into the last crypto winter, which was 2022 to 2023, when we started raising interest rates, I looked at this just the other day, interestingly, that it went down for a year, exactly 12 months.
All right.
October to October. And it lost, I believe the number was, I think it's 77% of its value. That was 2022 to 2023, which was the last time crypto really got whacked. 2023 had bottomed. We started cutting rates. Crypto skyrockets up to the current iteration. And it's up, I don't know what percentage, but it's up a lot. The current correction in crypto is nothing like that correction. That went on for exactly 12 months. The current correction from October, and it's been going on about 5 months.
Yeah.
And even though it's been going on less than half the amount of time, the fall, the total fall in 2022, 2023 was 77%. Crypto top to bottom in this fall was down about 55%, maybe close to 60%, and has now started to bounce back up. So the question is this a dead cat bounce that leads to a lower low, or is this sustainable? And the only way that gets answered is with global liquidity. Right. And, you know, when we think about could this free up global markets? Would it be good if we had we perpetuated the dollar based system? Would that bring dollars back into the U.S.? Yeah, it definitely would, because we've had dollars fleeing the U.S., selling treasuries, buying gold. That's not good.
And a lot of these other assets are at their all time highs. So, you know, people are taking their money and they're trying to reinvest into somewhere where they feel like there's still value to be had. And
yeah, what's on sale? It seems like crypto's on sale. Yeah, crypto's on sale right now. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny when gold continues to keep pushing higher and higher, but silver and platinum and the miners are struggling to keep pace with gold, it tells you that precious metals trade is over its peak and kind of getting long in the tooth. I think eventually we're going to see some money start to come out of that space and work its way back into some of those data center high-flying tech stocks. I mean, and that's actually what I'm betting on. We bought some real fast movers, Galaxy Digital, GLXY. Yeah.
You've been talking about
Galaxy. Yeah, I love it. So that was, if we go back to our prediction episode, mm-hmm. that was the one I thought maybe like a big bank would buy them. They are ripping. I think they were up like 16, 17% today. Yeehaw, giddy up.
Well, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's Home Team owns that.
Samsung hasn't moved a bit.
Well, I don't know. Samsung's too big. It's like GE, dude.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like
it might be, but they're still one of the biggest producers in chips. And I think that.
Well, of course. But they also are the biggest producer of TV screens and
I know.
So telephones.
It maybe gets diluted in all the other stuff.
And yeah, right. I mean, if you want to buy chips, you got to buy a chip company.
You're right.
Right? I mean, what do I know? What do I know? Anybody else want to talk about anything? What's going on? What's good? You like the
Bernie?
Like
you
the
had a question stock? Earlier.
Yeah, Bernie, what you got? Yeah. Oh yeah, Bernie's got a question. Question from the studio audience. What's up?
Oh, this was about.
NIL. Yeah, an NIL question.
Yeah, we're bringing this back into the Eddie Edwards segment.
Yeah, so I love it.
This is awesome.
What was the observation, Bernie?
I just mentioned the state of Mississippi has a bill going through that would exempt NIL money from state income tax.
So what he said is the Mississippi has a bill that's pending right now. Yeah, right. That's good.
I got a bill that's pending right now.
Burning good. Yeah.
There you go.
Deacon's on fire.
So the state of Mississippi is thinking about not taxing NIL money.
Talk about non-taxing NIL money, which would be a windfall for these student athletes, because it definitely... Okay. Well, and not only that, but it'd be a windfall for the local universities. And I think that's where the bigger, it stretches their money further where they can now attract.
We're talking about federal tax, state tax.
State tax.
State tax.
So if you're comparing LSU versus Mississippi, for example, or Mississippi State, or you know, Ole Miss, you're looking at now, well, that $1 million NIL money is going to go stretch.
I could be mistaken, and maybe I have a bad attitude about this, but correct me if I'm wrong. Is Mississippi not one of the poorest states in the goddamn country? It is, and they're thinking about not collecting taxes. Why?
They don't need
it. Because of football?
They don't need it.
Give me a goddamn break. I mean, that's one of the dumbest. Now, I'm sorry. This is not directed at you. I mean, just the shape and structure of some, like, seriously, one of the poorest states in the country is going to stop collecting tax so they can get a better receiver.
Priorities.
Give me a break, Mississippi.
It's all about the football.
I disagree, Deacon. I disagree because I think it's an investment in their universities.
It's the opposite of an investment.
It's a short-term investment into their for the little bit that they got to give back. It may attract that next athlete that may be deciding between this university or one of their competing, conferences.
Wasn't it Ole Miss's quarterback two years ago that left after the season before the bowl games and went to another? Wasn't it Ole Miss? Yeah. Because they were going into the quarterfinals.
Didn't they just hire Lane Kiffin, or did they just get rid of Lane?
They just got rid of him.
LSU. Oh, yeah, so they just got their ass burnt.
Jackson Dart. Okay. Yeah, that's exactly it. Who is the Giants quarterback now?
And Trinidad Chambliss was the quarterback this year.
And
Lane Kiffin left and took a lot of his
his
coaching staff with him and said, "You guys can't coach at the bowl."
So Mississippi's trying to get
playoffs, I should say.
Yeah, they're trying to combat.
Yeah.
But doesn't this all sound just so stupid?
Well, it is.
Sixth year exemption, no income tax. Talk about universities in Mississippi. These are all oxymorons. I mean, are we serious? Well, how many great universities we have here in the state of Pennsylvania, Bradley? Many.
Yeah.
Right. We're not talking.
Incidentally, Robin looked it up, and Mississippi is consistently ranked as one of the poorest states in the country.
It is, right? So,
I think it's one of the states that has no income tax, too, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Is that right?
No, there's income tax.
Well,
they do have income tax.
Okay, so I was mistaken there. But
some states have a personal property tax, like Virginia.
Yeah.
There's a lot of states. Florida.
They try to send you they want you to pay tax on something that you already owned, like your car.
Right.
If you live
in Virginia. Or like property.
If you own a car and a house in the state of Virginia, they tax you on it every year, whether you transact.
Well, it's a good thing you didn't own shit when you lived there.
But you don't pay state income taxes either, though. That's in lieu of a state income tax.
Not in Virginia. You have a state income tax in Virginia.
Oh, well, it was supposed to be in lieu of that.
Yeah.
I'm sure they find a way to.
Yeah.
So I was talking with an accountant today. I want to ask you your opinion on this.
Shit. I don't know is the answer, but go ahead.
No. I think it's your opinion. It's not a technical question.
Love these.
The accountant was dealing with the IRS, and it's tough to get through the IRS. I mean, they just don't answer the phone, right?
So I have done that in the past.
So the question is, do you think Trump's tariffs are really going to be worthy of him disbanding the IRS?
No, I think that's, we have to have an IRS. That's crazy talk.
It's not going to become the external IRS where we're collecting all this this revenue outside the states, and that's going to be enough to federal bill?
I think that's a short-sighted bit of rhetoric. Do you want the next president? Because remember, this isn't law. This is all by executive order.
Right.
So it's going to go away by executive order next time around, unless it gets passed into law. So, you know, I think honestly, the best, again, I always look at this through a market lens. The dollar has rebounded for the first time in a really long time. Tariff revenue is meaningful to the country. Whether you think the president has the right to do it or did it the right way or the wrong way or Congress is upset about it, that is not really what I'm concerned about. We need the money. The dollar is responding to the positivity associated with tariff revenues. We should find a way to keep that going, whether somebody has to make a concession or not, my humble opinion.
So it's just a marketing ploy then.
So you think the IRS's job is to keep people honest?
Well, I don't know. I mean, could we regulate mortality? Well, we could get really down in the hole here.
Well, this is why I think a national sales tax would make more sense.
National instead of income tax?
Pay no income tax.
Yep.
Keep all the money you earn.
Everything's based on consumption.
Correct.
Interesting.
Sounds like Ross Perot's back there in stockings and stilettos.
How does it work in Europe with a VAT tax?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, it's better than a flat tax. It requires almost no, nobody has to really moderate it or monitor it.
Well, that's what I like.
Well, that's never going to work.
Well, and
right, because you can put all these IRS people out of work.
Well, now with the digital age, you know, you should be instantly when you do a transaction, that money should just sweep right into the IRS's account. It should not have to pass through the merchant. It shouldn't have to be the responsibility of of the merchant or the consumer to have
people who have more are going to spend more.
Yeah, so it automatically gets paid.
Yeah,
there is no collections. It automatically gets swept and
paid. It's done. There's no tax day. There's no April 15th. That's all gone.
This is coming from the guy who believes that money's going to go away. Everything's going to be digital. We're going to use a Fed coin. I mean, there's going to be no money.
About it doesn't mean he believes it.
Right. I mean, you have seen the commercial, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
In this episode, the commercial for what's the
algorithmic
title?
The algorithmic state. That book's on the premise of Elon Musk saying there's going to be no jobs, no money in 15 to 20 years. What does that really look like? But the European Union is a perfect example of what that kind of looks like, because anything that you own over right now at the end of this year in 2026 in the European Union, as far as cash goes, anything above $10,000 is worthless. They're digitalizing everything.
I'm going to need to do some reading on that because that sounds bonkers to me.
Yeah, it does sound bonkers, but that's the European Union. They're making a real hard stance. They're saying even if you want to travel to Europe. In fact, we changed our travel plans because you have to get digital ID if you're going to travel.
Yeah, it's funny. My mother's side of the family, for some reason, the kids are all real smart. They always go to St. Andrews for college. And we're going to go over and visit the last cousin that is in St. Andrews. I was going to go with his dad. And you know what I was actually really afraid of? I was afraid of their new law that says that you can be detained at the airport for things that you've said on stuff on mediums like this one. And I thought, holy shit, like what if something got out about my opinion? Like what if they didn't like the way I talked about the Canadians in the curling, you know, and they detained me at the airport.
You didn't like your curling form. I mean, it was just very outrageous.
I mean, but look at how ruddy and like English Irish I look though. How could they couldn't take it out on me?
He just totally ignored the hog line. He's like,
He jumped the hog line. I mean, Jordan would have been proud.
We got to get a new line of callers. We really fell down on getting callers in. Like, why does that seem so difficult? We should just get like.
No, we should. You know, and now we, thanks to Perry, we are actually have, instead of the big Princess Leia headphones, we have the wireless ones, you know? So. Yeah. So we'll take the callers and you know, and if you want to talk about Deacon's outfit, you're more than welcome to call in about
you know what?
That.
Okay, we're gonna make a commitment that next week we're gonna have one caller per segment.
Yeah, we will.
What do you think about that?
We'll make sure that happens. It's been a busy week for both of us.
All right. Well,
you had a lot to do with the feds. I was wrapping up a book. And thank you to the sponsors that reached out to. By the way, I'm getting back to you.
Yeah, we had a great inquiry about a sponsorship opportunity.
Yeah, so
yeah, it was awesome.
People are writing us
from South Carolina. I will be getting back to you.
Wow.
And we did get some play from Savannah.
Savannah.
The distillery.
Yeah. And did you get a little play?
Picked up our story on their Instagram. You're not on social media.
I love it.
Right.
That is interesting.
I know. And we talked about why. Well, Perry's had a couple of bourbons.
I said Georgia.
Yeah.
Didn't I?
Yeah. You were just stuttering there a little bit.
Savannah. That's the name of the bourbon.
All right. Well,
he had that southern stutter going.
Yeah. Stoke the fire.
Hey, we better close this out. Yeah. We're going to close. I want to thank our studio audience tonight. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks to Perry. And we'll see you next week where fast thinking meets smooth drinking. We're going to get after this bottle and. See if we can get it done before that fire burns out.
That's right.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Talk to you, Mitchells.
This has been the Better with Bourbon podcast with Brad Martineau and Deacon Palmer. New episodes drop weekly. Be sure to subscribe or follow us.
The views and opinions shared on the Better with Bourbon podcast are our own and those of our guests. Nothing we discuss should be taken as financial, legal, business, or gambling advice. Don't make investment, business, or betting decisions based on our conversations, as you should always talk to a qualified professional. Always drink responsibly, never drink and drive, and only consume alcohol if you are of legal drinking age.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at RingCentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.